Because we are ever the professionals.
Ever the professionals. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you,
Merry
movie.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Today was the first time I heard Merry Christmas.
I know, yeah. I realised at the weekend I tried to do something sort of Christmassy and festive, but it just rained the whole time, so it wasn't all that nice. Mm. But yeah, I need to start saying Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, because this will be coming out, what, tomorrow's the 9th, so the next week will be the 16th.
Don't be telling people when we're recording.
What?
We look back into the past. Yeah, 16th. So you've got, what, 9 days left?
9 days.
Yeah, it's like a week and a day. It was Wednesday. Christmas is a Wednesday this year, isn't it?
I hope everyone's got their shopping sorted.
Yeah, if not, hop two. Yeah.
Now, if you listen to last week's episode, you know what's happening in this week's episode, which is the fact that this episode, there's no guest.
No guest?
Where's the guest?
What's happening?
Who will be the main focus of our podcast?
Me. It's what you've all been waiting for. Your favorite Christmas present. More of Kat.
Yes. So last week's episode, if you didn't listen to it, and this week's episode, it's our law. It's the co-host
law. It's a festive feature, baby. We're talking about our odd jobs.
Yeah.
It's the feedback we've got from the listeners of the pod. They want to know more about us.
I know, you guys are so cute.
I know. Shout out, listeners.
Yeah, so this week.
So this is your Christmas present just for me. More of me. Well, you're welcome.
So guys, this week's guest on the Odd Jobs podcast, we've got Kat Higgins. As seen on BBC One and BBC Three, right? Your MC extraordinaire.
Yeah, MC extraordinaire. MC a lot.
You've tour supported for Rosie Jones, Janine Haruni, and Tati McLeod.
None of whom have come on the podcast.
We've asked. But do you know what they are? Incredibly busy and
women,
successful.
Very successful. Actually, most are on tour or some version of tour. Jones has just wrapped her tour. Janine is going on tour next year. Buy tickets for Janine's tour.
Yeah, and you're also the co-host of the amazing Odd Jobs podcast. Welcome, Kat Higgins!
Thank you!
As if you're not here every week.
It's a pleasure to be here. What a lovely setup you have.
Thank you.
So nice.
The positioning of the lights were excellent today.
Oh, that was my job. Just making sure I have my full light. I actually don't know. I think the framing's all right on the camera, but fuck no. So long as the light's okay.
As long as we're in the frame mostly, I can do some post
editing. Yeah, we can figure it out.
Yeah. we've had to do that multiple times.
More than once.
I'm not going to get into it right now.
No. We've been figuring it out. It's getting better. It's getting slicker. You should have noticed. And if you haven't, please pay more attention. Me and Ruby are working really hard.
We really are. But Catherine. Kat.
Kat.
But Kat.
Cat, make a note to edit that.
Okay, editing that out.
Yeah, for listeners. Have I said this on the pod? Maybe I'll do it in my festive feature.
Yeah.
Have I said this on the pod about my name?
Yeah, you've said about changing the name stuff.
Did I? Or did I just say that on my show?
You did it at the show.
Did it at the show because you again introduced me by the wrong name. So for listeners of the pod, if you're here for the festive feature, let me give you a little bit of lore. If we're going into we're delving into my backstory, let me give you some Kat Higgins lore. So I have only recently started going by Kat Higgins. My full name is Catherine. And it's generally,
well, it's not even Catherine, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, Katie.
No, you're an idiot. Catherine. No one's abbreviating Katie to Catherine. You abbreviate Catherine to Katie. So I am Catherine. Britzer Catherine Higgins. That's okay. Who I am. But in childhood, and as you are aware, continuing past childhood, my family call me Kate or Katie. Mm. But that, don't you fucking dare. If anyone sees this, do not call me Kate or Katie. It feels like nails on a chalkboard for anyone who isn't blood related to me to say that.
I'm going to say the next time my dad sees you, he will.
Your dad's fine. 100%. Your dad's allowed to be my uncle. That's fine. That's completely. Your dad is my family.
You are just opening up by going, don't do that. Someone will do it.
I know. That's why I'm annoyed you've even mentioned it. Let's start off the podcast with me being angry at Ruby. That'll be great. That'll really set the tone. But my name is Catherine. But there's quite a few other Catherines in comedy.
Yeah.
There's also 17 different ways to spell Catherine. Most people get it
wrong.
Have
you worked that out?
No, I would say it's more because there are two letters it can start with. Mm. The only thing that is consistent is the ATH. So you can have C or you can have K, ATH, mm-hmm. And then you've got a bunch of different options on the endings. You've got E-R-I-N-E, O-R-I-N-E, O-R-I-N, E-R-I-N, or YN, which is mine. There's a bunch of different. So between the first letter and the endings, there's a bunch of different combinations. People kept getting my name wrong. There's also a friend of the pod, actually saw her at the weekend, Irish female comic called Catherine, Catherine Bohart, very successful. She's literally, my friend said to me once, my friend was like, she had brought a friend to come see me and she was trying to remember my name. Mm. And so she Googled Irish female comic ginger hair and Catherine Bohart. That is exactly who Catherine Bohart is. And she's more successful than me. So she's going to always stay popping up in those, popping up in those Google results. So yeah, I've gone to Cat. It's post-surgery Cat. Because, yeah, more lore. I had surgery this year and I had to step away from comedy for a bit. Don't have time.
The surgery
to the tea break.
The surgery was cutting off the last four letters of your name.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Weight loss surgery, literally. Just cut off all that excess letters.
Okay. So, well, let's begin. Cat.
Yes.
Let's begin by asking, so we know what your glamorous cool job
is. I honestly can't remember what any of the questions
are. Well, normally you do this beginning bit. Like you're,
I know,
straight
so now I'm
a,
like, wait, what's coming up?
Which is so funny because you should know what to say and I'm the one going, well, what does Cat normally do? Well, we don't know. We don't want to know about your wonderful, glorious, wonderful, amazing jobs.
Right.
We want to know about what got you there.
Yes.
About the old job, all the odd jobs that allowed you
the
to
first
be there.
Way I earn money, that's the question, isn't it?
Me
oh,
do
sorry,
it.
Yeah, you should be able to say it. I genuinely was trying to remember. Okay, Ruby, off you go.
So, let us know, what is the first way that you... What is the first way that you earned money? And it doesn't have to be...
You're doing my ad lib. It doesn't have to be a job. Yeah. It can be anything to put money in your pocket.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember now, and now I actually can't remember. But, yeah, I feel like I should have thought about this. I think I did have, like, me and Lorna, shout out Lorna, my best mate. She and I had this like pen repair business in sixth class. So when we were like 11 or 12, but I don't really remember us charging for it. And if we did, it was like very menial amounts. But that was definitely something. But I, around that same time, genuinely very young, around 12, started babysitting. I was babysitting straight
at
out 12? Of
gate.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to be left alone until you're 14, right?
Oh, I don't know if Ireland knows. Definitely not back in the day. I was very young to start babysitting, but I, one, have always been someone who gave off, like, I was always told I was very mature for my age. Mm. That's a telltale sign of a traumatized child. or a middle child, only your daughter. Eldest daughters are always, you're so mature for your age. Yeah. But I had that. And then also, and if you want to hear more about this, come to my show. But my family were quite notoriously bad with babysitters. AKA, we had a reputation of being a lawless bunch of children that would almost do physical harm to babysitters. So, but I was never the instigator. It was very much my brothers. I have three brothers. And so I think people were just like... Well, Kat Higgins has seen everything. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing she can't handle. But genuinely, I think it was a combination of that. And then also, I'm trying to think whether I babysat in sixth class or whether I was in like first year. But it was definitely around like 13. Easily.
Were you?
12, 13. Yeah. I think I was 12. And I think part of it again was my mum is a nurse and we live next door to the primary school. So we were one, everyone in the primary school knew us. But also if anything happened to any of the kids in the school beyond like a little graze, we did have a first aid qualified teacher, Miss Taylor. But anything beyond a graze, she'd call my mum. So my mum was sort of like a pseudo school nurse. Mm. And then I think people were basically like, oh, we'll get Kat in. And then also, if anything goes wrong, she could just call her mum, who's the nurse who knows more about this shit than us anyway.
So were you quite a popular babysitter?
Yeah.
So yeah, how many babysittings would you do in like a week or something?
It would really vary. Honestly, it was very seasonal work. Because like coming up to Christmas now, you're booked and busy. Everyone's got Christmas parties. There's work to do. Oh, let me tell you, run up to Christmas. And it works out because you want a little bit of change and stuff like this. But, and I feel like I started off babysitting for a family friend. And it was genuinely one of those, like, on the day, I think whoever the babysitter was supposed to be dropped out. And they were just like, whatever else. And they rang my mum. And mum was like, yeah. Katie, as she would call me. She'd be like, yeah, she'll come round and look. And I remember who it was. And I remember my mum just being like, you just might, they'll be in bed or they'll be put to bed. Or you just put them to bed. Anything goes wrong, just ring me. Or ring the, like, it was one of them. They were like, we really want to go to this party or whatever the fuck it was. And we need someone. And so my mum was like, yeah, she's my mum was always, And I've picked this bone with Fran before, but my mum was constantly basically being like, you can handle that with stuff that I shouldn't have been handling. She was just constantly like, she's got it. Don't worry. One of the things was when I didn't break. Again, come to my show, but my brother broke my toe. He dislocated and broke two toes. And I ended up in A&E when I was, maybe 12, around that age. And I had to
Did you say dislocated and broke?
Yeah, so we were in the sea jumping over waves. You know the way you like over waves, whatever else. And I like, I don't know, got in my brother's way, annoyed him, something else. So as I jumped, he like shoved me and my foot just jammed into like a rock, a boulder in the sea. And so my toes got crushed and my big one got broken and dislocated. And the other one, because I have that thing where my second toe is bigger than my friend there, that one got broken and the big toe got broken and dislocated. And would you believe, you actually use your big toe for a lot of balance.
Yeah.
So that is actually sort of an issue. So anyways, I went to A&E. It's a long story. We were in Mayo. We were in Castlebar. It was Kirkpatrick. It was Wreath Sunday, which is the day when everyone climbs Kirkpatrick, which is a big mountain that's in Mayo. And people on Wreath Sunday climb it barefoot, even though it's full of gravel. It's a pilgrimage. It's a Catholic thing.
What a worst time to break your toe.
Right. So everyone is in A&E because they've all like turned the rank. And it's a load of people who never fucking hike doing this walk that day. So we're waiting in A&E for like 12. Then a really bad car accident happened and they rushed them in. I remember that. Like, we were there for like 13-14 hours. Like, we've been there for fucking ages and we were on our holidays. And so finally I got seen by the doctor, whatever else. He sees the state of it and he's like, oh no, you're gonna have to come back. We need to put you under general to like reset those bones because like this is really painful. And he was like, we can't do this under local. And mum was like, she can handle it. I was like, excuse me? And mum, honest to God, the nurse was there. And mum was like, no, she's got a really high pain tolerance. She can handle it. Can't you, Katie? Yeah, you're great. You're strong. And I was very competitive and I had three brothers. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'm tough. Yeah. And mum was like, no, she can handle it. And the nurse was like, really? And then when they were doing it, the nurse was like, oh my gosh, I can't look. The nurse was getting freaked out by the fact that I was awake while they were resetting these bones. And let me tell you something, it was painful as fuck, but I handled it. Mum was basically like, I am not coming back and sitting here waiting in A&E another day. That's not happening. We've been here 12 hours. Give her some drugs. I'll buy her some sweets on the way home. Just fucking reset those bones.
I love the fact as well that she was like, no, Kat's tough. And you were like, yeah, I am. Yeah, I am.
I remember knowing
all the way through the surgery.
It wasn't even a surgery. We were in, and this thing, the guy was like, well, we need to, whatever else. Mum was like, no, it's fine. Reset them now. And genuinely, I literally said this to my mum when I was last home. She like brought it up. She was like, she's handling it. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, would you fucking get that done? Mum was like, no, I'd want that. I was like, fuck you. And she birthed 4 10-pound babies. So like that woman has, I think she was like, I have a high pain threshold. She'll just fucking get on with it. And but I said it to my mom like recently and I was like, I don't know whether I do have a high pain threshold. I was like, did I? Because I hadn't really broken a bone before that, like anything. I was like, had I like demonstrated a high pain threshold? And mum was like, well, I knew if I told you, you'd believe it. And I was like, so now I'm like, I've always said I have a really high pain threshold. My mum's a nurse in a hospital nearly fainted when I was getting something done. And now I'm like, I don't know if that's true or whether I'm just like, but I've like conditioned myself to believe I can withstand this pain.
This feels like we're answering the last question at the end and you're being like, I've learned, if you believe it, it's true.
So I started babysitting. But anyways, yeah, so broke it. Wait, what were we talking about? Broken toe?
You were bringing up broken toe because you're talking about your brothers and about your brothers being...
Yeah, so basically I feel like there was something else to it. But yeah, my brothers were just really rough and tumble and whatever else. And so I was just like, that thing where my mum was like, she can handle it. I genuinely think it was a neighbour who rang and then they were like, yeah. And I have always been really good with kids and like reading stories and stuff like this. And these kids really like me. They're a family friend. So then I started babysitting for them and then word gets round because I'm from a small enough like parish, a village. It's not even really, there's no shop where I live. We're like 3.5 miles from a shop. So it's one of them where like there's a certain group of kids who are at babysitting age or whatever else. Like, oh fuck, my babysitter's dropped out of this or can't do Saturday night. Who do we ring? Who do we call? And then names get shared around. But there was a couple of families I was like a regular for. And I was like doing a lot of it. Like, the Woodses, who are a great family. I fancied the dad. I think I've mentioned this before. Yeah. He was the carpenter.
Emily Bampton's episode.
Yes. But then there was a family. Oh, right. And this is actually quite a good lesson.
I was
going
to ask who was your favourite family to babysit for and who was the worst. And you don't have to name them.
The Woodses easily were the favourite. Or...
You don't want to name too many because then the worst one will be through elimination. They'll be able to work out who they are.
I don't care if the worst people know who it is. The mother's still in the church choir with Fran. Anyways, there was also a family. Let's just say I won't name them. But I loved working. They have this beautiful house, this like old Georgian fucking mansion, this like gorgeous old house that was like a generational thing. Like they didn't live in it originally, and then like the granddad or whatever else like passed away. They lived down the road, and they moved into this house. And I then worked another job I had that I'm sure will come up. I worked with the son, like, because the eldest wasn't that much younger than me, maybe only a year or two, but he went to the all boys boarding school not far away. So when he was away, even when he was like, I was like 14, he was 12 type thing. So I did babysit him once or twice, but it was more like once he went to boarding school, he had three younger siblings. And I identified so much with the little girl. Well, there was two little girls because there was like one of four and there was two little girls, Susie and Emma, and I loved them. But I used to put them to bed and then just like pretend that it was my kitchen. And I was like 14, but I was the first time I had house envy. It's like an old house. Yeah. And you don't always get like old, beautiful, like, houses like that in Ireland. Oh my, and these bay windows with like window seats in them. And I used to sit in the window seat at night and look out at the horses in the field because they're horsey people and be like, this is my house. Like, I loved babysitting them because I loved that house. And also, they were really good.
I have to put you to bed because I need to daydream.
I need to go live out my fantasy downstairs. And when I was like in college, worked with the eldest son, I was like, I'll marry you. And I used to give him lifts to work. And I was like, I'll marry you and you can get with whoever you want. It can be a fully open marriage. I just want that house. And to this day, that offer stands, Ben. I want that house. I love that house whenever I drive past it. It's beautiful. So, yeah, Ben, if you're, you know, whatever else. I feel like he's probably married. But yeah, and the Woodses were a great family. Anyways, the family, the Woodses were great because the eldest was, again, not that much younger than me. And he was embarrassed that I was the babysitter. And so he used to be like, no, I'll put Kira. He was like, I'll put the young ones to bed. So he just did my job for me. I literally didn't do anything. I didn't have to get them to brush their teeth. Nothing. He used to do it because he wanted to seem mature. So I was like, fucking sweet.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You put them to bed for me, please.
I was like, okay, if you say, are you sure? Everything okay? And they'd be like, yeah. I'd be like, solid.
Great.
Literally. The worst family were, they were cheap and they had money. This is the problem.
Yeah.
And they were fucking cheeky as well. I babysat once for them and didn't like them. The kids were crazy and I was like, nah, like I'll focus. And it was, again, it was that thing if they were stuck. And then I saw a text from her one day as I was in school. I was about 15 or so at this stage. Yeah, because I think I was doing my junior cert. So I'm like 15 and I get a text from the one being like, can you babysit tonight? And I was like, school night? No, like it's a Wednesday. It was like a Wednesday or something. I was like, nah, because I had after school study because I was doing my junior cert, which is like your GCSEs. So I was doing study after school from 5 to 7. And so I would only get home at whatever time. So I was like, no. And it was like, I think she said in the text that she was like, oh, we need you to stay overnight or whatever else. And I was like, it's a fucking school night, you mad bitch. No. Yeah. And so I said no. And she tried to call me. But again, I was in school, wasn't I? I had my phone, whatever else. And she was a teacher. So I was like, the husband earned loads of money though. So they were rich. And just because you're like, no, teacher's salary. Trust me, there was money in that house. And I searched.
Catherine found it.
Yeah. I went looking. no, but she, anyways, texted around me and I was like, I'm just going to ignore that. And then I get a phone call from my mum at like 5 o'clock, something, we're going into study. And mum was like, hey, Kate, oh, I've had a call from so-and-so. She was like, she really needs a babysitter tonight. So when you're done babysitting, I'm going to drop you around. I was like, what? My mum was like, well, she seemed like she really needs someone.
No.
She was like, I'm going to drop off your uniform now. So you have fresh uniform for the morning. I was like, what? And they live like just up the road from us. And they live in a little like estate, like a little cul-de-sac. And in that cul-de-sac was two people I went to school with. So the bus stopped off there. And so mum was like, just get off the bus and go to their house. Because I think she said they need to go at 7. I was like, well, the bus won't get me there till like 7:35 or 40 or whatever the fuck. So I was like, oh no, can't do this. And so she was like, no, I'll have already dropped around your pyjama. I'll drop it off now. And I was like, what have you done? You've sold me down that river. And then mum was like, honestly, they'll be in bed. Like, you just sleep over and then you get the bus from there in the morning. And I was like, for fuck's sake. But I was like, this is so weird. If I asked to stay at a friend's house on a school night, I would not be allowed. But my mum was pimping me out to the community, right? I think maybe that's why I was babysitting young. Everyone was like, Fran Higgins will sell her daughter to anyone. Anyways, I go and do it, whatever else. The kids are not asleep. And they're fucking crazy kids. Mm. It's a school night, whatever else. And they were like, oh, we'll be home late, but you go to sleep. But maybe just... And I'd never done an overnight before, ever, in anyone's house. And so I was like, it feels weird to go to sleep while the parents aren't home. And also their house, like never stayed in the house. The guest room was like downstairs in this like weird cold room off the garage. And I was like, I was like, I don't think I'm supposed to go to sleep till they come home. You know, I just didn't know. And also, because these kids are fucking bananas, I kept putting them to bed. And then I would like go, I'd be downstairs. It'd be like at 10 p.m. on a Wednesday night. And this like six-year-old, I could hear playing in her room. She was one of these kids who had loads of toys in her room. And I was like, I never had toys in my room. But anyway, she'd be like playing and going bananas. So I was like, I don't want to go to sleep. And then like I could hear one getting out of her room and going into her sister's room. So I was like, they're wreaking havoc. And so I was like, I don't feel like I can go to sleep. But the parents didn't come home till like after 2 a.m. or some bullshit. Yeah. That was obviously why they wanted me to stay over. And so then I like heard them come in and was like, okay, I can go to sleep. Went to sleep, woke up the next morning and got myself dressed and things that came. And it was also just so awkward, like by myself being in this like neighbor's house in the morning. You know, when you're like, this
Like, was there breakfast for you?
Yeah, I like went in and they like breakfast in the cereal bowls or something. But I was like, oh, it's okay. Cause I also was like, oh shit, I was further up the bus route. So I was like, I have to get the bus early. Like I had to get the bus at like 7:30 in the morning, like quite early. And so I was like, they weren't down yet. And obviously cause they didn't get in till 2 a.m. or some shit. So I was like sitting there waiting and I was like, I need to be paid. Like they haven't paid me. And so anyways, then the mum comes downstairs dressing and she's like, oh, did you get breakfast? And I was like, oh no, I've got to go for the bus. It's going to be here in like 5 minutes. She was like, oh, sorry. And then she was like, oh, where's Jim, let's say the husband. She was like, oh, where is he? And she like grabbed him. She was like, you need to pay Catherine, whatever else. And this was the thing that my mum had said that when it was whatever else, people were like, oh my God, if you're staying overnight, you'll get paid like double. You'll get like so much money, whatever else. Like that. And you would think, again, getting a 15-year-old to do an overnight on a weeknight or whatever else.
On a school night and you don't come back till
and
2 a.m.
Generally at the rate, the minimum rate was sort of a fiver an hour for babysitting back then. Mm. So if you started at like 6 p.m. till 10, you'd get like 20 quid type of thing. Maybe 20, but normally sort of 25 people being nice, right? We were in Celtic Tiger Ireland, by the way. This is when the boom was happening, okay? And these people had boom money, okay? So I was sort of like, wow, I'm going to get like 50, 60 quid here because I've done overnight.
Yeah.
He sort of hands me cash rolled up, you know, like you can't see it. So, and I could see a 20 on the outside. So I was like, okay. And he was like, oh, there. And I was like, oh, thanks. And genuinely, I was like, I'm going to miss my bus. I'm going to no way to get to, my school's like 40 minutes away. I was like, I'm going to miss my bus. Because it was a private school bus. It's not like a route. And so I like grabbed the money off him, shoved it into my pocket, whatever else. Now the two friends that lived in this cul-de-sac, I'd said to them, I was like, hey, will you make sure you wait for me? Like I'm staying at so-and-so's house. Like I need to get the bus, whatever else. We come out and one of the lads, he's like still my best friend to this day. He was absolutely gassed. We call him Rodney. It's not his name, but he knows who he is. And he was like, oh, Catherine, huh? And he was like, Jez, no. He was like, how much cash do you get for that? He was like, that must have been some fucking money. They're rolling in it. Like, because they had like a Mercedes. Like, they were bougie people where we lived. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't actually check. We're waiting for the bus. And he was like, oh, go on. Show me how much they got. Pulled it open. Just the 20. That was it.
Fuck off.
20 quid. And I had done, I'd been there, I'd gone from school to the house, stayed overnight and then gone back the next day. And I remember when I took, my mum is still pissed off. My mum was like, excuse me?
Good.
Because my mum knew they had money.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how some people get their money. Exactly, they keep it. Skimping off other people.
So I learned early doors to work with certain family that I then, because I was like, I'm in demand. So I would pawn off sometimes some of the bad families on people. Or I'd be like, they're not great payers, whatever else. Blah, blah, blah. But I never went back. I was like, mum, I'm never going back to that house again. And I never did.
Good.
And the mum's still so lovely to me at Christmas when she sees me. And I'm like, hi, cheap bitch.
You're holding on to that.
Well, yeah, because I was a fucking child.
Yeah.
And that's so tight.
Yeah, it is. That's so bad. Okay, so you did babysitting first.
Babysitting was definitely it. But then I also got an actual job when I was 14, which again was illegal. Was I 14? Yeah, it was before my leaving cert. I then worked in a stadium So my, should I say this? No, I won't. A relative of mine, not close enough to be anyone whereby I benefit from it, but a relative, like a sort of distant family member, owns a chain of sports shops in Ireland. They had shops in Croke Park, which is Ireland's like huge stadium. It's like our Wembley Stadium or whatever else. Croke Park's really big and it's where Gaelic football is played.
Yeah.
And so they would have like stands, like... Yeah, you know the way there's like counters or whatever else on all the different levels in a stadium. There was like three or four different like stands that would sell the jerseys of that day or whatever else. Okay. But because it's very temp work, it was just like the weekends or match days or whatever else. They needed people. So somehow through like the family member or whatever else, my brother was doing it first. John was doing it. My older brother was doing it. And it was a cash in hand job and it was just on the weekends or whatever else. And again, my brother loves sport. And so it was like, oh, you can maybe watch the match. You could never watch the match. But it was still cash in hand type stuff. And we were then, because it was cash in hand, I think they were paying us like a tenner an hour, which again is like a 14, 15 year old was like good money.
Yeah.
So they were doing that. And then I think they were like stuck one weekend or something. They were like, oh, we need people. Because they used to try and bring in staff from the actual retail shops. But again, they'd all need staff at the weekend, whatever. And it was summer. It was always Gaelic football, Croke Park matches were always like in the summer. So it was a summer thing. And I was like, I'll do it. I'll come. I'll do it. And I don't know if the guy who did it, actually, no, he didn't. Because I did it for like two summers. And I remember once me and it ended up being that I, like, was really good at it, and they were like, you're really great at this. And I used to man one of the stands by myself.
So you were manning the stand, and so you were selling, what were you selling?
Selling merch. So there was three of the stands, I think, I can't remember, at the different levels, and the Hogan stand and the Cusick stand, but that were like proper like shops where they would be selling like the different jerseys and like, you know, kit and jackets and umbrellas were a bit, you know, all that kind of crack. Jackets, oh, you got a real rainy day unexpectedly, you'd make fucking cash on the jackets. But I used to sometimes man the smaller stand. That there's a thing, and again, this is so specific to like Ga and Croke Park, but there used to be this thing of like these braids, these like wool braids. Do you ever... That basically would be like, say Dublin is the colours of the Dublin Ga team are like a sky blue and like a navy blue, and so you would get these like braids that would be like wool that were those colours that were like plaited together,
yeah,
and it would be like a thing, and it's like a real thing with Ga to like have those and have them like tied around your wrist or tied around your head, or you'd have them hanging in your car and stuff like this. So I'd be selling them, keychains, bottle openers, car flags, they were big. You know, they're like things you stick on the car. Car flags, small little wavy flags that were those colours. So like the smaller merch.
Did you do a lot of upselling? Persuaded people if they were getting one thing, might as well get another
thing. And it was also, but it was genuinely, and it was so funny because every now and again when it wasn't me doing it, someone else do it, they'd be like, that's so much harder to work there. Because one, you had to like have them out on the counter. It was so easy for someone to come up and try and nick stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, no, don't you nick anything. But then also it was so many more, people are like, oh, I'll take that for €2. Like people would be throwing money at you, taking stuff. Like it was one of those things where, because by yourself as well, trying to man like a big mass queue or whatever else. But so I was doing that in the stadium, and it was really funny because I did find out then, kind of a year or two in, I sort of worked my way up. I'd work in some of the shops, and one of the things they used to get me to do, which is fucking mental now that I think back to it, this is probably one of the maddest things I've done in a job, like just when I think about like,
and what a perfect place to be talking about it.
Yeah. was that basically, because again, this is Celtic Tiger, we're talking boom time, lads, there's cash flowing, and like a Ga jersey is like, I don't know, like 60 odd quid if not more. And people would be selling like loads, and especially the corporate level, you'd be selling loads of jerseys and stuff. And people used to really pay in cash back in the day. Like that used to be, cash was king back in the day. And so there would, like before the match, you'd be doing so many transactions. You would have like thousands of quid just in this stand in cash.
Yeah.
And even I on the little penny stand would end up with like hundreds of quid really quickly in cash. And obviously like you're just exposed. There's no security guard. There's no doors. You're just like a stand in the stadium. So they wanted to do a cash lift. So like once the game had started, they would go round to each of them and leave you with just like a baseline float again.
Yeah.
Like they'd leave you with a good float, but want to lift everything and put it in the safe. There was a safe in the like storeroom where we kept all the stock. But they used to get me to do the cash lift by myself. So I used to go, and I am not joking you, I would go from one, two, three. I would go to the three of them, and easily amongst the three would have about 4 or 5 grand cash in my pocket. And they never gave me like a bag. Well, actually, sometimes we used to have a cash bag, one of the like float bags or whatever else. And they'd say, oh, in your hand, hold. I used to get like, you know, in the float, you would get those like plastic bags that were like 10 pounds of ones or 50 p's or something.
Yeah.
So that it looked like I was just bringing change from one, because they were like, if anyone follows you. And the reason they gave me this job is because I was tangentially related to the CEO of the company. So they were like, she won't steal. That was because they didn't, there wasn't like the best records. They'd write down on a thing to be like, that's that much, this is how much we've taken. But it was literally paper and pen style shit. So I could have easily siphoned off a few £100.
Yeah.
I look back now, I don't know why the fuck I didn't. Why'd... Right?
But when you're doing those cash lifts,
yeah.
Like, or when we did banking at the pub, you're supposed to... Like, you're not supposed to have a specific banking bag or a safe bag. You're supposed to just put it in, like, an unassuming backpack or your bag you currently have or whatever.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do it on the same day.
On an unassuming 14-year-old girl. That's but the best way to do it.
That's what I'm saying, is that you are just being like, no one's going to assume that you're walking around with £5,000.
And so I remember the manager one of the times being like, here, make sure, because I'd like, it became, like, my thing to do. So they would literally send someone from one of the other stalls down to my little accessory stall sometimes, and then it would be like, right, Catherine's gonna go do the float, whatever else. And he would be like, make sure you wear your O'Neill's, because we'd be given a t-shirt to wear or whatever else, but O'Neill's like a trade, because they had zips on the pockets, so that because he was like, that way then just the cash straight into my pocket. And the other thing they sometimes used to get me to do was like a cover, was like a whole jersey size, so it looked like I was bringing stock from one to the other. But again, the braids, like something small that they'd be like, oh, in case, because they were like, in case anyone's following you or watching
you. They really
you.
Do think there was a threat and they were sending you anyway.
It happened at the stadium. The bars used to get robbed. And so I didn't know this at the time, but my brother was like, yeah, because you remember the bars, people used to like be drunk, come over the bar, fucking deck the lad, rip the cash and run out. Like it used to be a thing because there was no security or whatever else. And so I was like, I had no idea. I loved it though. I'd be walking around being like, I have so much money in my pockets. And I remember as well, which is mental. You know the way nowadays, like if you're in a shop and like, or like it's known that like, oh, if you're somewhere and they're trying to shoplift or whatever else, just let them steal. Like don't fight them off. I used to walk around at 14 fucking years of age, 15 years of age as a girl and be like, if anyone stops me, I'll go for his fucking eyes and then I'll kick him in the balls.
They don't know. My mum thinks I have a really high
pain tolerance. I have a high pain tolerance. But yeah, I used to like play out scenarios in my head.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, if I'm near one of the like sort of entry points, because there used to be, you know, stewards or whatever else, I'll run up there and da-da-da-da. I was like, I'm not, they're not taking this cash off me. I should have thrown it in their faces. Especially because that distant relative, weirdly, some family beef happened that we don't have time for. And they fired me from the job because I called in sick one time when I had crippling period pain, which I now have been diagnosed with PCOS and endometriosis. It was real bad. I'd been in that whole week stocking, prepping. And that was actually, I they used to be like, oh, because it got really busy. And then what happened was the Irish Rugby Stadium was getting redone. So the Irish international rugby matches started happening at Croke Park. And that was a huge business. And it was like a big deal to have rugby there.
Yeah.
Because then England, it's a long story, but it was a big deal to have the rugby there. And so then it's way different stock. You're going from Ga stock, Ga jerseys, like two different sports. And these stands are really small. We had to get all different stock in and swap them out. So then they were like, shit, we need people there in the week. And because it wasn't a retail store, like there was no actual staff for Croke Park. And so the manager guy was like, Cam's really good. He was like, do you want to come up? At this time, I had a different part-time job, summer job, because the stadium was only supposed to be sort of odd weekends and stuff like this. So I had like another summer job. So I was working like proper, like full-time, like doing shifts. And also, I don't live in Dublin. Like I was properly getting like a bus. I used to get the 126 up an hour. I would go get dropped to the bus, take 10, 15 minutes, get the bus up an hour and a bit to Dublin, then walk 15, 20 minutes from the 126, the Connolly, up to Croke Park to go do a full day's work. And then we'll come back. And then the next day we'll be in the smoothie bar where I worked. It was mad. But while I was in there restocking, he was saying something. And he was like, well, your age. And I was like, no, I'm only in fourth year. Or like, whatever. Yeah. I said something about the year in school. And he was like, and this guy who I'd worked with for like 2 years was like, what age are you? And I did look older for my age. Like I went to a nightclub for the first time when I was 13. Like I looked old for my age. And I was like, he wasn't like creepy or anything. He was a lovely man. But I was like, I'm 16. He was like, you've worked here for 2 years because it was cash in hand and shit. No one ever checked anything.
No.
And I was like, yeah. And I could see he was like, oh, I thought you were 18. He was like, are you allowed to be working this many hours right now? And I was like, oh, well, my other job. He was like, you have two jobs. I was like, yeah. because it was crash time at that point. So the recession hit. But yeah.
Wow.
But that then, anyways, I've been in all week redoing all the stock, doing like 12-hour days, sorting out all the different stock, all the different sizes, swatching it from one to the other. I did the Saturday in Crow Park, came home that day, was absolutely wiped, was obviously knackered because I was literally illegally working insane hours and was in so much crippling pain with my period. Mum was like, you just can't go in. And so my mum rang him because I was like getting sick and stuff. My mum rang him and was like, listen, she's really not well. She can't come in tomorrow. He was like, yeah, no worries, no bother, blah, blah, blah. It happened to be that then they like struggled to get in a member's time. I think it was actually when it came to doing the cash lift or something. It got flagged to like someone high up in the business that like the standard family member or someone wasn't there. So they were like, we need someone secure to go do it. So I think they asked a really high senior manager. And then this...
So how did this end up with you being fired?
Somehow the CEO found out and he basically got on to... How do I say this? I'm not related to the CEO. He's married to my family. That's how it's quite tangentially. And I don't know what fucking marital beef, I don't know what business beef, marital beef, family beef, I don't know what's going on. But it got somehow back all the way to the CEO that I'd called in sick. And he made it such a deal that a relative rang my mom and was like, she's let us down. Da, 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 da. My mom was like, are you insane? She's working crazy hours. And then I never got asked back. And the manager sent me the loveliest message. Oh. He like messaged me and was like, if you ever want one of the... I basically couldn't come back to Crow Park, but he then managed some of the retail shops. He was like, if you ever need a reference, like if you ever need a job in one of the retails, like you're great. Da, da, da. And I was like, this is mental.
Okay, so while you're working all of these jobs and you're hustling and doing all this as just a mere 14-year-old, what was the job that you were aspiring to be doing when you were younger?
Honestly, everything. I wanted to be a pop star. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be the president of Ireland. I wanted to be a doctor. Like, I wanted to be everything.
And that's a very you response. Yeah. You love putting your finger in every pie.
Single pie. But I did, because my mum was a nurse and my mum's a really good nurse. And I am someone who, even now as an adult, I'm like, I think I'm basically a nurse because my mum was one. Like
I sometimes ask you questions when I need answers.
I also have a good friend who's both her parents are doctors. She's not a doctor. I was speaking to her at the weekend and she was discussing how her mum was ill with something. And she was like, I was telling her, do you not think it's this and that? I was like, you were like medicine-splaining to your mother who is a GP. And she was like, yeah. And I was right. And so I do think there's something in the children of medical professionals being like, I also watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy. I love that show. But yeah, I actually do.
Well, your household also growing up had a lot of injuries.
A lot of injuries, a lot of illnesses. My brother,
both all of you being so sporty, you're all like...
I mainly got out unscathed. I mainly had head injuries. I mainly...
unscathed.
Well, like, one of my brothers broke like his arm, like the same arm, like three times. Broke his elbow. The other one broke an elbow. And again, the brother who broke the arm broke the other brother's elbow. There was a lot of like each other breaking each other's bones in our house. Because yeah, for all the sport we played, it was very much like just when we were fighting with each other. But I got serious head injuries. I was hospitalized with a crack. Well, no, I didn't actually have a cracked skull. Or no, did I crack my skull? Interestingly enough, I can't remember.
It feels like part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm like, maybe I should look into that. No, I had a serious thing because it was a really dumb story and I was an idiot. But I got into a tube of fencing and then bounced on a wall at a friend's house. We were all doing it as kids. And then I stupidly, because I'm a show off, struggled to believe it. I like hopped on this wall and fell because I was in the tube of fencing, just fell straight onto concrete on my head from sort of a height. And I came to, we were at our neighbors with like another family. And I came to with all three mums, like pinning me down, being like Catherine, da, 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 whatever else. And I bit one of the mums because I was in so much pain. I was trying to, because they were like holding me down because I think they were like, they were trying to hold me in place because they didn't know if I'd snap my neck, if I was paralyzed. Like, it was quite bad. And I'd fully like gone unconscious and stuff like this. And it was really hard apparently to get me out of the tube of fencing because I was limp. And they were like, do we roll her out? Anyways, they like had to drive me. They like called an ambulance. The ambulance was going to be too long, so they drove me to hospital. I was fine. What was hilarious was I was in the same hospital room my brother had been in. like a year or two earlier. But they were worried I had like bleeding or like, I think my brain swelled a bit like this, but I was fine. And
did that rule out any of your job prospects for you?
No, honestly, it was fine. But I think that I do remember that hospital saying, I just like hospital. I'm good in a crisis. I don't. I actually think this is slightly skipping ahead, but a job that I haven't done that I would love to have done is a paramedic. I think if I didn't do comedy.
Oh, you would thrive. I would love to be.
And I genuinely like, because my other jobs, I've done a bajillion. We're never going to get through them. But it's like my degree was sort of in communications and marketing and PR and stuff like this. And so that's kind of the day job, desky jobs. I've done a lot with comedy. But from when I left college, I didn't love the degree. I did an internship and whatever else. But from sort of when I left college, I've been pursuing some version of like acting, comedy, whatever else. Mm. So that career was never the focus. So I was just doing whatever my qualifications would allow me to do to earn money to pursue comedy and acting. But if I was properly like, I'm going to hang up my boots, like I don't like comedy, whatever else. And I was like, I want a job that I really care about. I would go and train and be a paramedic. Because I love that's being in crisis. Charge.
Yeah. Well, it's being in charge of a situation.
Yeah.
It's been the focal point. It's been nurturing of other people.
My friend's going to be watching this. She'll be like, you have to tell the fucking story. So I also am known with some of my friends as being, I know first aid. It's like a phrase that's said a lot because basically I do know first aid. I've had multiple first aid qualifications because I've worked as a coach, as a hockey coach. I've been a nanny, I've babysat, whatever else. So I've done a lot of jobs that required you to be first aid trained. So I've done my qualifications like 4 or 5 times. It's out of date now, but like you have to do them every 2 years and I've easily done 4 or 5 first aid courses. And so I am up on my first aid. But the first time we went on a girls' holiday... when we were like 19, 20 or whatever else. It's my first night, to be fair. Everyone else had been there a bit longer. I was working. I had many jobs, as I do. So I came a bit later and we went to a phone party in this bar. And you know, I'll tell you, it was in Tenerife and it was dodgy because they were giving us glass, in glasses, whilst there was just foam everywhere. So obviously, as you can imagine, people are dropping drinks, smashing glass on the floor, on this like tiled floor.
On this hidden floor below foam.
That we're like sliding around in the foam in. Like honestly, there are photos of all of us on the ground being like, woo, the foam. Anyways, as you can imagine, my best mate Lorna, already mentioned, she slices the back of her leg, right? Oh, yeah. And there's a big old gash. We're drunk as fuck, so this thing is bleeding quite profusely. And anyways, we're there and everyone's like, blah, blah, blah. And the guy in the bar seems really stressed. He doesn't know what to do or whatever else. And I'm like, I got this. And I'm so drunk. Like, I'm so drunk. Like, I can't explain. It was like first night of holidays. Like, really, like, I'm so buzzing. Everyone else has been here. I'd FOMO. Like, I've drank 4 of those, like, blue buckets of drink. Like, I am fucked. And I'm like, get me some vodka. We need vodka. And I keep trying to, like, pour vodka on it. Anyways, we go. Some of the other girls, slightly more sensible, they're like, let's take us outside. There's an ambulance on the strip. Because obviously people are injuring themselves regularly in Tenerife. And we go out to the ambulance and Lorna's there like with this bandage on or whatever else. And these paramedics, she's in the back of the ambulance. She's in the back of the ambulance getting seen to by these paramedics. And I keep being like, excuse me, I know first aid. And then I keep like taking the bandage. I was like, you haven't washed it. Taking the bandage off her leg that the paramedics are putting on to the point where Lorna was like, get her the fuck out of here. Like, so I was a problem. I don't remember any of this. But to this day, when I say I want to be a paramedic, Lorna will be like, because she knows first aid. Because I was a real problem. But I do. I think that would be the job that I would like to. So when I was younger, genuinely, I did want to be a doctor. But that was why I think I've mentioned before that I did chemistry I did work experience when I was in fourth year as a nurse and knew I didn't want to be a nurse. And I did some as a physio and as an OT. I did like a rotation of work experience in a hospital and worked with a few different departments.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Shout out Catherine Dempsey, my friend Kira's mum, who got me in and sorted that out for me. But I was like, yeah, I'd like to work in a hospital, whatever. So I sort of was like, maybe physio, maybe OT. Like I didn't know, but I thought something medical because I like to be wanted. And so that's why I did chemistry for Leaving Cert. But I was so bad at chemistry. I hated it. And I didn't want to do biology because I hated the teacher. Again, it's been mentioned in a previous episode.
I think in the episode last week.
Oh, yeah, last week. Yeah. Miss Crummy, Miss Scummy. Yeah. You listen to the anecdote. But then also I loved like law and politics. I did mock trials when I was younger.
Again, arguing.
Yeah.
Or debate.
100%.
You love it.
I was captain of the debate team.
Yeah. Which is so, that sounds like a joke. No. It sounds like you're like mockingly saying, yeah, I was captain of the debate team.
No, I was captain of the Ruby Jones debate team. That was the name. The Ruby Jones Memorial debate team. I was the captain. And I loved it. I loved forming an argument, doing whatever. And that's very lawyery. And off the back of doing the debating, I then was in mock trials, which are like these fake trials that happen.
I did mock trials.
But where did yours happen?
We did them at the courts.
Yeah, we did it in the four courts in Dublin, which is like where all the big fucking high business trials. It'd be like in the, what is it called here? The Old Bailey. It's like going into the Old Bailey and doing an actual mock trial. It was bananas.
We got to the national finals. Our team.
Go on.
Yeah, and so we had to go to Leeds, which from Southampton to Leeds, significant.
I was about to say, that's a trip.
And so we went up there and we had to stay in a hotel overnight and our school was doing it. And we're like, this is mad. And then we looked around the room and bear in mind, we were teenagers, 13-year-olds, right?
Oh, that's young. We weren't that, we were older. We were 17.
We were like, yeah, we were one of the younger teams there.
Okay.
We were 13 and we were all, because we had to dress up like as if we were going to court.
Yeah.
So we were dressed up, but we're just like a normal school in Southampton. Mm. And so we were dressed up in like what our parents had available to us.
Yeah,
either
what
we already had because we had some smart clothing because some of us had been to weddings before.
Yeah.
Or things that were hand-me-downs from our siblings.
Just the idea of wanting you in a veil.
But then when we got there, we looked around, everyone else, it was very clear everyone else was from a private school, boarding schools, like the more affluent schools. And I was like, God, fuck, we don't fit in. That was very bizarre, but it was really fun. It was really fun doing
that. Yeah, it was so fun. I loved it. And yeah, so like I did that. And then I also was in like school musicals and plays and stuff like this. And I knew I loved performing and being an attention hero and stuff. And so I still to this day would love... I would have loved to have been a singer or a musician, but I just am not good enough at singing. I was always like, fine. I was like in the choir, never the soloist. Do you know what I mean? But I would have loved. Yeah. So honestly, I was like, I want to do everything. And I'm still like, I want to do everything.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure what I'll be when I grow up.
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're figuring it out.
We are figuring it out.
But yeah, I've done enough of the jobs to know what I don't want to do. And honestly, I think that is a real key thing.
Yeah. Okay, well, we need to pick another question
for you.
I feel like, see, the thing is, I know so many of your stories.
I know. You go. I'm looking at some. I feel like we haven't even really scratched the surface of the odd jobs.
No, we really
haven't.
Maybe
I should rattle off some more. So, dog walker, I worked in a smoothie shop. That was when I was working in the stadium. Then I became a tour guide. I loved the tour guiding job. That was like 4 years of all my college summers, I did that. Yeah. Aisling B actually also worked in that same space and was a tour guide there as well. So, there was a real Kildare Comedy Pipeline coming out of the Irish National Stud in Japanese Gardens. Great place. Go visit it. But I love that. That, I think, was actually the first time I kind of did stand-up. You were like doing tours to like 50, 60 people, like bus loads of like OAPs. And you'd like make it.
And
I end up writing my own jokes and having my own bits in it. And I loved it.
It's not your style to just be handed a script and for you to just read it off and do the job the bare minimum. You're going to add your flair.
What was hilarious about that job was, depending on what tour guide you got such a different experience. Because like one of the lads, bless him, Sean, he was like mad about horses. Like he was really into horse racing and the lineage and all that stuff. And we had like very impressive, like, famous horses, like people, like Australians would come and we'd be like, oh, here's, oh my God, what's his name now? I can see him in front of me. Oh no, he's lovely. He was the first horse from the Northern Hemisphere to win the Melbourne Cup, which is huge. And Dermot Weld was his trainer. And the horse's name was Vintage Crop. There we go. Vintage Crop. And he was like really well known because he was like the first whatever else. And so they'd come and they'd be like, wow, it's him. And then people would be like, what about his lineage? And I'd be like, he's a gelding, which means he's had the snip, so he can't reproduce. So you know all this, like, you learn baseline horse stuff, but, like, Sean's tours, like, I remember once, like, catching the end of Sean's tour, and he was like, and so this year at this race, his lineage and da-da-da-da, and it was all these, like, facts and figure, like, all this, like, information around horse racing industry. Mine was not that. Mine was all these jokes. Because it was basically, a stud farm is basically a horse breeding farm. Essentially a horse brothel is what we're working with here, lads. There's stallions who, and this is the bit, I used to like make it a game of like, guess how much the covering fee. The covering fee is the fee for the covering, which a covering is basically like the shag. Because in thoroughbred horse racing, it has to be what's called a live cover. AKA, you can't be artificially inseminated. They have to literally do the deed, right? So people will fly mares from like one end of the world to the other to go see that stallion so they can breed with that stallion and stuff. Like, it's huge business. And to get covered by this stallion is a fee. And I used to be like, guess how much the fee is? And because we'd won a stallion, Invincible Spirit, and it was a lot. Guess.
Okay, I have to guess how much the fee is.
And this is how I'd clarify it. He can do up to 5 a day. Technically, they're allowed to do 5 a day because 4 hours in between. But they generally average like maybe 2 or 3 a day. And then the breeding season is from the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. Very romantic to kick it off. See how I remember all of this? Till I think the 14th of May or something like this. Something like that. But it's about maybe 3-4 months.
Okay, 3-4 months.
3-4 day.
And people are flying horses to this. So
they can do.
I'm thinking it's got to be more than the cost of that that flight. Because otherwise it won't be worth it.
I don't know how much it is to fly a
horse. So
I mean, like people who come from Ireland on a ferry.
My automatic guess, 15 grand.
No. Way more.
Whoa.
Way more.
30 grand.
Double it.
60,
and this is back in the day. So I would say in
are you
going to
say tiger?
There's the Celtic tiger. Ruby has no idea what the Celtic tiger is. I just reference it constantly. The boom and the bust.
There's
Ruby.
Definitely some sort of Amazon series.
No,
about
Ireland is really like a pre and a post Celtic. It was like when we for the first time ever in our history basically had money, and we lost the run of ourselves. So much so that we fucking squandered it. And then there was a huge economic crash. And it was like really, really bad. So boom and bust. This was post actually the crash. But the horse racing industry always has fucking money.
So 60,000.
60,000 per cover.
Per cover.
So like each shag. You're paying 60 grand for this horse to shag your mare. And so I'm like, this is funny. Like, how are you not making jokes about this? There's also a teaser pony. So do you know about this? Teaser pony is where basically if you want the mare to be covered by the stallion, you'll often like send her, if she's not in the country or near, you'll send her to the stud farm like when it's coming to breeding season, because she like you can't always tell the same way like, all us gals, right? Cycles are a little bit unknown. And so you want to make sure she's in heat, as they'd call it, right? Basically she's ovulating, and you want to ensure that like she's there, and because that can only last like a day or two, so it has to be there. And again, if the stallion's already in the covering shed, he's got to wait 4 hours because that's how long it takes his sperm to regenerate. It's a whole fucking thing. So they were like, she has to be on site. But sometimes the mare, they can be like, they check the mares, and so they'll be like, oh, I think she's coming into season. And what they would do is, because, and I'm sure there is a more scientific way of doing this, of checking her ovulation levels. I'm certain of it. But what they used to do in the farm, and this sounds like a tale, but like I saw it happen, was that there would be a pony, right? A stallion, but he was a pony, right? So not a thoroughbred, who they used to have in this stable. God love them. They used to have him in the stable that had like almost like a window, right? Like a counter that would like share between him and the outside, and they'd open that up and they'd bring the mare into like the little like enclosure out by the window or whatever else, and he would basically be like, oh yeah, woman, da, 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 and get a bit randy, and by how she responded to him they would be able to tell whether she was in heat or not, or whether he reacted because he'd be able to smell that she was in heat. So they would just but there was a concrete wall that had rubber on it, because sometimes the females used to like kick and stuff like this. Yeah. The mares would kick. And so they used to do that, get them all worked up and nice. And then they'd be like, oh, she's prime. Take her away to the covering shed. And poor Tommy would just be left there with a fucking hard on in the stable.
Oh, that poor horse.
Oh, I know. And this would happen to that poor horse multiple times a day. Genuinely, I don't know why. I'm like, I'm assuming at some point someone let him have a go on someone. I don't know.
Have to.
But yeah, so how am I not? So we go round on the tour of the route. We like would pass Vintage Crop and Beef or Salmon, these like famous horses. Then we'd see the mares and the ponies in the fields. We'd explain about the...
And then you see the cucks.
The things. And then we'd go into the stables and then we'd be like, well, this is Tommy's office. And we'd explain who Tommy was. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? Not make jokes about this? And then we go around to the stallions and we'd be like, guess how much he is? Guess how much his jizz is worth. Guess how much he is. And then we got to the covering shed, right? Which is the shed where they do like the coverings. And there's every covering. This is still a thing. Every covering to this day has to be filmed and recorded, right? They have to film the horses having sex because artificial insemination isn't allowed in thoroughbred horse racing. They're really strict on it. So you have to have proof of live cover. So if someone goes like, I don't think, because they're really into like the lineage of horses and stuff. So if they're like, I don't think that sire, that foal or whatever it is, that filly is actually from Invincible Spirit, whoever it is, they have to be like, here's the proof of that mare on the, in the board, in the covering shed, they have like a time, they'll put up a thing, like a board with like the date, time, whatever else, the information. And then they just film the horses fucking. And I used to make jokes that you could buy the CDs in the back of the gift shop. Horse porn jokes, ladies and gentlemen. Great. So how was I not supposed to make these jokes?
Oh my God, amazing. Yeah. I do feel like we've got to get to the...
We've got to wrap this shit
we've
up.
We've got to wrap up. But obviously,
that was one of the jobs. And then, yeah, marketing. What else have I done? Nanning. I was a nanny for six years.
You
were a
chef.
Too many stories to talk about. I was a chef. Yeah, I worked in restaurants.
You've been worked in production.
Oh God, yeah.
Street team. What else?
Street team, been a producer. Yeah, I produce comedy shows. I've been a marketing tour coordinator. Worked on the floor of a restaurant, ended up in the back working as a chef. Bar, been done loads of bar work.
So
worked at festivals.
All of those things. Yeah. Right? What is something that you have learned the most from and has been the most useful to you?
Nothing. I've learned literally nothing.
And what a way to end.
Yeah. And that's the episode, folks.
Hey. Now, well, I was going to say Merry Christmas.
Ruby was like, and we're done. Learn the most. Honestly, I actually think one of them that wasn't a job, weirdly, is the thing I learned the most from, which is more lore than whatever else. But I was a founding member of the London Irish Abortion Rights Campaign.
Yes.
And that is part of like the political love that came back to me. It started off with just a march, and then we sort of were like, we've got a bunch of people here with a load of will and want, and we started having meetings, and the next thing you know, we have this award-winning campaign, and we are just campaigning to try and, one, decriminalise abortion in Ireland, but also in Northern Ireland. And a hop, skip and a jump, it's very complicated. We sort of, not accidentally, because it was exactly what we were trying to do for years, but very accidentally in how it actually happened, ended up on one day decriminalising abortion in Northern Ireland and same-sex marriage, which is a hell of a doozy for a day.
That's a hell of a day.
But that campaign, none of us were getting paid. None of us were, it was our full-time job. We used to get emails from like journalists and all sorts to be like, oh, can we shadow you? We won awards. Glamour gave us an award for our campaign. There wasn't a wage between us. All of us were just really, really not doing our day jobs and doing this on the side. And I it was the first time I did sort of comedy as well, in the sense that I ran pub quizzes as fundraisers for the campaign. And I would write the pub quizzes and again, be cracking jokes with a microphone in my hand to a pub full of people. And so that sort of gave me the confidence to go do comedy. And genuinely, it was that thing where I was like, oh fuck, there can be no structure around something, but if you like have a lot of will and intent and a group of people work together, like you can actually kind of change the world. Like there is a law that has changed now that wouldn't have changed, not without me personally, but without like the group as a whole. And like genuinely, repeal the 8th was like a lot of people, but Northern Ireland was kind of us. It was Stella Creasy, who worked a lot with us, and one of the founders of our campaign was Stella's aide in Westminster. So like, and some of the words that were read out in Westminster that day were written by Paul, one of the guys in, like it was genuinely very much had our fingerprints on it. And I think it's the thing I'm proudest of, but it also made me realize that like the only thing that's required to change anything in this world is a lot of hard work and will and want. But like no one's ever going to give you, it's not like, oh, you have to be given the keys to the castle. Like you can just start banging on doors and eventually one will fall through. And so I think I learned so much from that, in the sense of like comedy as well. Like a lot of shit hasn't worked out for me with comedy, in the sense I started getting going and then COVID happened and then I started doing well BBC and tour support stuff, and then I got my vocal cord cyst and whatever else. Like you'll get sidetracked, but if you just keep at stuff and keep working hard and get good people around you, like shit'll happen.
And if you just believe it.
If you just believe it, then it will happen. Full Fran. Circle moment. Shout out to Fran. If you believe you've no pain tolerance.
That was a lovely note to end on.
Yeah.
And it's very true.
It's very sincere and true, yeah. But those are some of the odd jobs. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
To all the listeners. Genuinely, have a really great break. We're taking a break now for about 2 weeks. We'll be back in January.
Yeah, I think it's the 6th of January. So I can't confirm, but it's...
Oh, and we've some great guests. Yeah. The first episode back is a real... We can
Mary O'Connell.
Yes.
It's Mary
O'Connor's the first episode back. Amazing. Sorry.
It's wonderful. It's a really good one. They always are. Okay, right. We love you.
We love you. Also, buy tickets for Christmas. Buy tickets to any of the comics tours that we've highlighted and things. All of our previous guests, they're all amazing. We wouldn't have them on if they weren't. Also, Ruby and I are both at Leicester Comedy Festival the 12th of February.
The 21st of February.
Make yourself some plans after sober January or dry January or whatever else. Come see us. Please like, share, follow, subscribe. And thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. We love you.
See you in the new year.